Excellent. Thank you so much for coming, everyone. It's a cold afternoon. I'd like to begin by acknowledging that we're meeting on Aboriginal land and to pay my respects to the Wurundjeri people and their elders, past, present, and emerging. It's so good to see so many new faces here. You might not know me. My name's Alice Allen. This is my third time running Sporting Poets, which has run for 3 years before I was doing it. And third time at Compass Pizza, which is our cozy little nook that we have here now. And I'm really, really excited to bring up our first poet. Excuse me reading off my phone here for a second. Our first poet tonight is Carmen Main. Carmen Main is a writer and spoken word performer from Melbourne. Her style is personal, attempts immediacy, and is heavily influenced by pop culture, music, and art. She blurs lines between poetry and catharsis. Carmen received an honourable mention at the Melbourne Spoken Word Prize 2015 and is included in the audio journal Audacious Volume 2, published by Melbourne Spoken Word. She has featured at many regular Melbourne poetry gigs, loves open mic, and is grateful to be able to share her work with others. She can't help but keep writing. Thanks so much, Carmen. Cozy space up here. This is lovely. So I'm going to start with a phone poem. I know it's a genre now. It's a genre. And I like this one because it kind of gets me started, so I hope it does the same for you. It's called Wild Thing. Sometimes the spaces we place in language mean little more than keep out, stay away. I'm not vulnerable, I'm impenetrable, and I'm fucking angry. Don't try and stop me, speak down to me, reason with me. Would you really reason with a lion or leopard? I mean, spots are in season again, but seriously, I have these teeth for a reason, and surgical precision is not what I'm known for. What colour are your entrails? If all else fails, we could find out together. I could show you mine. Been doing this for ages on stages, and your faces merge into one behind tree branches of audiences, and somehow the spotlight stops me from feeling stage fright, but I'm quick to get amnesia, and I'm falling for the poacher. He has such succinct syntax. He knows all the right words, even puts me off my prowl. Should be old enough by now to see it coming or whatever it is. What do you call these one-night relationships when endangered is desirable and the wilderness and proper hiding places seem more sparse than my mane is? It's stress, it's stress, it's stress. Try resting for a while. Pick a bough for sleep. Stop answering the dead questions. They don't even care about the words, the words, the words. We all know it's my pelt they're after. Those of you who are friends of mine on social media would know that my plan for this evening's set was based around carbohydrates. I do this thing where I go out and eat pasta late at night, and I write things in my journal, my pasta poems. So this is called Familiar. A disclaimer for this one, because it says the food's not good, but it's not about here. It's about Cafe Romantica, which is now closed. Familiar. The reason I come back here is because the food is always familiar. It's not that good, but it's known. Though the pasta in the lasagna is 7 sheets deep, and the red sauce is more of a dread sauce, and it's not distributed evenly. The waitstaff recognise my eye bags, but they don't hassle me. I remember I didn't eat much today. Maybe that's why I'm uber critical slash unhappy. Honestly, the dread red sauce tastes like 1994 when my mum first got cancer, and sickness makes me hungry. The four of us always had to go to Nan's house for dinner. After school, she'd pick us up in her blue Volvo, and we played corners in the back seat, speeding through the hills. She voluntarily gave away her license when old age finally got her. It's familiar. And when Dad picked us up, it was dark. He'd eat leftovers, scrape plates clean, and mop up dread sauce dregs with bread and butter. We'd fall asleep in the car as he sped in the dark, and I wonder if Mum was ever coming home or getting better. I'd dream of blue cotton clouds the same shade as her dressing gown, and on waking, attempt a grown-up conversation to help my father feel better, tactfully avoiding hopeful homecomings. He'd sometimes keep the driver window down even though it was cold out, and I realise now that I have my licence, it was so he'd stay awake and not accidentally kill us. I keep ordering dinner here rather than prepare my own meals. Call it carb-centric time warp. Call it inexpensive therapy. Call it wasteful, call it redundant. Call it a misunderstanding of my memories. But this plateful is my childhood. I never ask questions because I don't like disappointing answers. In so many ways, nothing has changed. Thank you. I do write a lot about my family and cafes and food, and this is another one like that. It's called Enigma, and I guess it's for my grandmother. I heard your enigmatic tone creep, solicitous, false, from the corner of a stranger's mouth at another Epicure lift-out cafe, as if I could live my life any other way. He name-drops comedians in an effort to impress his company, obvious, and eats eggs. Clearly has never had to look into the small, bright, beaded eye of a hen. Tactless. No respect. Where does this hatred come from? So deep, so deep. Synthesis is silent, yet it screams if ever I care to amplify it. I've long thought there's a valve within myself that only few could reach, though it eludes me and excludes me. In a wooden booth across from me sit four perfect mothers. The coffee turns in my stomach. So sick of seeing the same women everywhere. This morning, I half woke to a false reality. My nan had died. I had to tell social media. I was strangely glad that my dad might feel a sliver of what I felt, but then I thought of her, Tarax Lemonade, making cakes under a skylight in the Ferny Creek kitchen, and felt incredibly foolish, like the spongy Fraggle Rock stickers with googly beaded eyes on the spare fridge. I smelt the extended death of my pa again, strength slipping, touched cold billiard balls, blue chalk staining fingers, and the rigid plastic triangles that seek oversimplification. Growling, a dog barking, my uncle's bull terrier, Oscar, who had to go to the farm forever, lest he bite my baby cousin, prevention, be careful. The scariest thing about this vivid half dream was that it had or will happen. When Nan dies, I'm the matriarchy, lady, baroness, childless. The buck stops with me, and I'm not ready. This one's also written at a restaurant down the road. I worked in hospitality for the longest time, and something really irks me when people just don't treat other people very nicely. And I was eating by myself and someone was treating the wait staff member like, I'm like, how can you treat someone like that? Anyway, it's called Cold Cuts. From this angle, you can see the PIN numbers, how much or how little well-dressed customers are willing to tip waitresses. The cold cuts curl in the warmth behind glass, soppressata and prosciutto. Try to forget probe thermometers and the exponential growth of bacteria in the danger zone. Clipboards and graphs are clinical, but dining out is an art form. To peer over the bar is advantageous, gives an edge. You can see how this team works. The sandbags and stagehands are generous and practiced. This is an established institution. Ragu is called out from past to stovetop in the kitchen. And even though you eat here alone, know that you are consumed. You're a vital part of this busy organism. No one can ever really feel lonely with wine and ravioli seated at a bar on Lygon Street. It's going a little bit faster than I thought. I might read one or two more. This is called I'm Founding a New Religion, and I guess it's for those food experiences where you are hanging out by yourself, wondering about the world, and it's just more efficient to eat in your bedroom, really, because the heat is in there. I'm founding a new religion. It's called eating in your bedroom in front of the heater. There will be no doctrine, no dogma to speak of, no casual Sunday gossip, or wringing your hands out over an altar. There will be no children invited, so no chance for inappropriate behaviour. This is a religion of solitude and pasta. Our God is not superficial, and there is no need for sacrifice because, Lord knows, we've been given up on too many times. It's best to bring your own bowl, and if you don't like what's dished up, you'll have to scrape it out yourself. No one is responsible for your heavy lifting but you. Our God is not big on karma, or trade-offs, or coincidences, but fate sits on his right foot like a breeze block. He won't throw his hat in the ring, though he could shove that same hat up the exhaust pipe at any time. We're not overly precious about meal plans. Sometimes there's things only Oreos can fix, and we all know that Mee Goreng noodles contain palm oil, but we can anoint you in radiant heat, make you feel clean and capable. There will be a rotating phone tree to organise who's responsible for the milk, tea and biscuits after each service. Who will fill the electric urn? Water the plants? Who will lock the prayer box afterwards? We are not a tax write-off. We're not going to make you sing unnecessarily, although spontaneous song has been known to burst out when you are happy. Thank you. I might just do one last poem. It's about avocados, and it's called Consolation Prize. At the Evelyn, your splinter eyes scolded me, told me that if I had to, I could only love you quietly, handed me an avocado half, unfolded your pocket knife, exchanged the blade for a grip on neglected organs that seemed to lack interest in keeping me alive. Fundamentally, I've changed. I house treacherous corpuscles, muscles flinch, high alert, reckless, regardless of intentions. The standards you set for me scrape the Melbourne grey, to which we are accustomed. I'm not afraid, but I should be. I may have contracted myxomatosis, or perhaps your latest psychosis has an unexplained hypnotic edge. You've always been cool, too cool for me. I find word hooks to hang myself on long after you've left the building. Regardless, I'm grateful for one night you saved my life on a blue vinyl couch. A blurred backlit hospital flat screen we were ignoring was blaring a warning. Sneaking in through emergency is not an analogy. You have this control over the clamour rush within blood vessels, yet you often choose to crush. I oversimplify most things. Love is invariably complex. You wiped green mess on your lap, folded the blade back. I am still hungry. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Karen. That was fantastic. I feel really hungry. And as a poet, I'm such a process nerd. And so when you're talking about going to these cafes and ordering a big bowl of pasta and writing poetry, I'm like, yes, let's do that. Why wouldn't we do that? I'm very, very excited to introduce our next poet for the evening. It's Robbie Coban.
By Charles Baudelaire, remembering is only a new form of suffering. The nurse. I often ask for the ending. Blood-soaked white sheets you wake to each night, beneath their betrayed minds abandoned to your care. I am sorry the body does not decide when, and that you see me in the hollowed faces and knife dreams. Not in your duty. All empathy soon becoming misery. Late one night you called through our silence, a strange voice that spoke as if crying. Your mother was in another town asleep, your father away at war, further from you than ours could say. All distance finds loneliness in time. I often ask for the ending. No way to reassemble this, no handbook or tested process written into your tongue. only this strange voice I still hear, the night shift dragging to dawn, the mercy you breathe. I think if I didn't write poetry, I'd be a motivational speaker because I have a real knack for putting positivity out into the world. This poem is written from the perspective of one of the women who killed for Charles Manson. And it's prefaced by a quote from Charlie. "We're not in Wonderland anymore, Alice." Sadie. Many of us gathered here, each silent beyond reflections. Heavy breath, your instructions that weigh too much. The stained grains beneath this carpet of knives buried in the California desert. I want more of you than eyes and breath in the makeshift house you have built, where we all live terrified and in love. Your voyeuristic gaze against skin, the collision of flesh and trembling breath, your eyes fixed on us and on her as you enter for the first time, every time. How my body shook in the airless haze of your arms then, shaking again now the way we all do. Together, I want to climb the length of the blade that won't ever come out. This poem's called The Change. Unsettled earth, the drive of rain from the mountains against the paddock surface. The night smells of soaked grasses and frost on leaves. Walking down the road, trailing your shadow. You are not alone with lights visible at the end of each of the driveways in the distance. Even your own, in the house where your dying father sleeps. The unendurable weight pressing against his chest. His father, who could not remember the earth beneath him, confined to his chair by the window, sparrows landing and staring through the glass. Choosing to remain fixed to the openness amongst your family, the people you do not know until they are gone. Aging gums, open fields surrounding the single road down the street, the grey ceiling overhead, cars that only pass on their way to somewhere else. You were standing at childhood's edge, not wanting to cross but to disappear, fighting with your family and drinking stolen wine every night in your bedroom. If only you could tell someone what is occurring inside your skull instead of railing against the interminable emptiness. An interchangeable problem and its cure, believing people only want to leave here or visit, not live. You do not yet want to live. Unable to speak the words as they form, fracturing the lines leading back completely. Love, as you knew it then, has passed with the bodies of others you knew. There is not an ache, only a memory, as everything soon becomes. There is a message in the silhouetted trees, decaying branches against the sky, long silences, hours that offer nothing and everything. You could almost forget the years that claw into the soundless air. The day you left, the pain that binds you here. Your mother who cannot look at you without crying. Beneath the distance of years, the asphalt roads rising to meet the mouth of the driveway. You almost believe you can at last hold childhood and wake. An opening of space. Rebirth. Short one, it's called Letter. Distances have built this, touching morning, briefly throwing light across silences numerous as hours. Impossible to believe this was made by love, and this too is what trails the eyeless day, grieving and solitary, clinging to something unreachable. Sorry, my banter's not as good as Carmen's. Another day at home. Again it is dawn. The sound of water against the dam's eroded basin. At a careful distance from the deepest point, I press my hands into the tepid pool at its mouth. The absence of heat pulses faintly beneath my skin. I cannot remember the rain or when it last fell against the grasses. I stare at the bone-coloured sky surrounding the radiating sun, the paddock burning further into itself. Rambo. The point is to arrive at the unknown, you wrote in the letter from your restless anguish. Your sightless vision of careful derangement before you died as a child. Calcification of an unmoving moving body and the stasis of breath striking suddenly. Dark solitude in an empty farmhouse. A circled furrow in the skin of your wrist. Attempting to assemble the disfiguring voices into anything but misery. Finding meaning in this world is not difficult. There is nothing but farce. The one you constructed in your boredom as if the earth would ignite and abruptly be saved from everything you might cause. I'll just finish on an especially positive one. It's called Tomorrow. Soon you will decide to stop yourself before your body does. You have already aged your mother prematurely and made your father ill with anger. You would not want to be your own child. You know too well what you do when you are alone, the collapsed childhood that lasted, the perpetual misery you cling to for company. And what else does your abiding pain and its end mean to the ones who love you? There is a theory that dying is not unlike sleep, only without fear of waking the way you do, in scared delusion, mirroring childbirth. Who the hell can know why? There is nothing unique in suffering. The world does it alone. And who is ever truly alive? Despite this, a voice that may not be your own is always with you. At least I was here. Thank you.
Thank you, Robbie. That was amazing. I didn't let Robbie know I was going to do this, so I hope it's okay. But Robbie has put together this beautiful book called Scar to Scar with Michelle Seminar, who's a Sydney poet. And apparently it's a collaborative project that kind of came out of, I think Robbie sent poems to Michelle and then Michelle remixed them and sent them back. I'm just going to read you one because I can. This is called The Harrowing and it's a remix of one of Robbie's poems called Circle One. The body and inferno, buried ancestors' voices rising through the spire of the neck, electrifying flesh into fire. Captive in those human pastures, being dives into itself, descends through binding seed, becomes the light. It's a really nice book if you can get your hands on it. Unfortunately, we don't have any of those here, but we do have some of Robbie's collaboration with our next poet, Amanda Anastasi. Amanda has been published locally and internationally, including in the Massachusetts Review, 4W, Cordite Poetry Review, and on the walls of Brand's Artist Lane. Amanda's poetry collections include 2012 and Other Poems and a chapbook with Robbie Coburn entitled The Silences. Amanda is a two-time winner of the Ada Cambridge Poetry Prize and has been shortlisted in the W.B. Yeats Poetry Prize and the Adrian Abbott Poetry Prize. She is the convener of La Mama Poetica. Thanks so much, Amanda.
Submitted a bio.
No.
It's all good.
Thank you for that.
It's all good.
Okay. Yes, so I put together a chapbook with Robbie called The Silences, and I'm going to begin with two poems from that collection. Denial. Hinge a door in the forest, so threads into the air. Descend an upward escalator. Make your clamour mute, your silence a bullfighter stare. Make a mask out of circumstance. Peel off your smiles and pack them with your shoes, coats, scarves. Sprinkle forget-me-nots on the locks. Draw a curtain on the sun. Paint 1,000 eyes, bury 1,000 imaginings. When you go, the leaves of the season's end will be at your ankles. The snail will be lingering by the unstopping train. Be astounded by the unbeaten track. Turn on the light, begin the return. Let us navigate this disfigured paradise, collecting remnants of a landscape before tar grounds, before the concrete islands closed in, before fields became flanked with unconcerned fences. Today, there is a stirring. The trees whisper revolt with crisp emerald flags, their fruit infested with knowing. And upon taking a bite, I know my blindness. The wormholes, the bridges pleading reconnection. Steel arms become flesh, hooks become fingers once more. Myopia diminishes. I rise from beneath this wary construction. In the wind, there is a breath so forgotten it is new, and so close it greets a prodigal sun returning. In the sky, a cruelly kind storm is looming. In the grass, the rustle of revolt. I've written some one-line poems, which I was inspired to write after I read Ian's collection of one-line poems called Slivers, and I was amazed by that collection. So here are my attempts at containing a poem within one line. You need not have your eyes open to know that the sun is out. I have yet to invite myself. Friday, what didn't happen? The bride's doubt is visible through the veil. Metronome on, appassionato lost. The fireman is trapped inside. A draft, yet the curtains are still. Thank you. This is a new poem. I was inspired to write it after, I have a lot of family members and friends who have the compulsion to procreate, they all have babies. And this, I wrote this after I met one of my best friend's baby, newcomer. From beneath her blanket, she writhes like a cupped spider, as though aware of her upcoming divergence from the intent of the temporary god that holds her spoon, of the bell that will end play, of the acceptable poisons to be adopted, the rushes into sunlight, assuming permanence. The mist junctures. The steps that will fall too carefully to invite epiphany. Like the turns of her mind later to easily intersect with the unforeseen rebellions of others, her curled, jutting feet suddenly are still. There will be no freer moment than this, the starting line. The undiluted view before indoctrination begins its sly, steady seep. Now a bundle passed from hand to hand, She is years from spotting and unpicking the expectations sewn into her birth. The spell of lilting songs and happy-ended tales and twists. It is the beginning of being carried and ushered the way. Today, at least, she is yet to be named. I'd read a few more of my very short poems because I really enjoy writing in the short form, because why write something in 30 lines when you can write it in 5? It doesn't seem any point to it. This is called The Classroom. The children form a ragged, barely contained line under uniform paper-tacked windows. In allocated seats, they answer set questions, adjust the slope of their handwriting, paint the first vital stroke of the mask, and learn the necessary art of suppression. That's it, they're very short. City loop train. Assimilated, downturned lids, iPhone fiddling fingers, iPod locked ears, remote minds in proximate bodies. Eyes feigning neutral, human simulating mechanical, intricate worlds in guarded vaults. Okay, so this is loosely based on the form of haiku. It's called Reef 2050. Recalling an old tune, a sporadic leaf of yellow surfaces. White coral, translucence without the shimmer. Starfish clamour over a banquet sucked colourless. A sighting of purple and scarlet, cameras out. Riding in glass-bottomed boats, they check their phones. The dugong fin begins its drift to the shallows. Okay, so this is a poem basically about a memory that keeps returning, or a memory of a person that keeps revisiting. It's called Unexiled. The myopic blur of an out-of-focus snap. An old assistant vanishing, then reappearing oddly through a side door. The lead in a film for a decade unwatched. The primary strokes of a portrait once full and blazing with precision. An occasional daylight spectre. The scraps lingering in a directory of gestures and words. The accidental utterance of a name. The cold crawl back to the outside and the slow forgetting. Okay, this is a new one. It's in the current issue of Foam E, which is an online journal, which I encourage you to have a read of. This is called Last Humans. The stoic, the washed-up fish eaters, the floating people mistaken for boys, those that lean against glass panes graffitied with black marker obituaries, the mutterers, the wailers in the parks, the power walkers that won't stop, the weeping selfies, the huggers, the entanglement of mute glances. The agent that stays in the empty open for inspection until the end. The student buried in a set text. The incense burners in the sewers. The junkies, the abandoned phones. The frugal-lined woman planting makeshift crops between two walls. The bone collectors, the hystericals, those who refuse to step on the stiff birds, those unmoved by the disoriented dogs and talk of the all-white reef. The singers, the strict hypocrites, the ones that cannot cry anymore, the ones that know it is their doing. People to read it on the page for the way it looks, but this is doesn't match my poetry at all. It should be, we've been good in the childhood poem. I wrote this based on a lithograph by Dan Houser of Beethoven on his deathbed, which was produced in 1827, and I saw it and I wrote this, and it's called Moonlight. Let go your ear trumpets, the legless piano to the floor, this seized pastoral of sound, this pouring of elegant alarm, of moonlight biding its time, a voice too vibrant for calm, too solid for chaos. Now you are the still in the appassionata, the towering sweep, the warily paved perfection of the grave allegretto of the seventh, diamond scraps of sound on the rim of perception, an ostinato that catches the soul upon entrance. How right that you left during a spring storm to the rumble and crack of light, hushed eroica, finished tempest, necessary misfit with the world. Rest now, knowing you've captured the holiness and the futility. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Amanda. Thank you so much. I really appreciate all my readers who came along this afternoon. You never quite know what people are going to read and how things are going to link together, but I just feel like there was some beautiful resonances this evening. So let's hear it one more time for Amanda Carmen and Rosie. And thanks to everyone for coming. If it's your first Sporting Poets or your 27th, I really, really appreciate you being here. There are so many reasons not to leave the house. It's so cold and uninviting, but you're all here, so thank you so much. And we'll see you in a month's time.